during his lifetime, but what about after his lifetime? So it seems like there is a major distinction to be drawn. The Gemara tells us that Mar Okva, as he's on his deathbed, so he was ready to give away half of his money. And the Gemara says, half your money, how can you do that? So we have the din on Daf Nun that you shouldn't give away more than a fifth. Now, if we say the Gemara Daf Nun is talking about mitzvos, not staka, then it's still possible. We could say that this Gemara is talking about good advice. Maybe it's not talking as a din. There are ways to read it. But in any event, the Gemara asks the contradiction between the two, between Maruf's behavior and the one-fifth limit slash recommendation. And the answer that we're given is, no, that's only true during one's lifetime, where we have to worry about impoverishment. Hani mili mechayim shemiyere minuchasav aval yachar misa less limba. After one dies, so then we're not afraid of this. So what's the halachic implication you get from that Gemara? That if you were to phrase Maruf's position into one sentence, or the conclusion of this Gemara, how would you transmit it? What's the point?
Tamir?
I'll say Tamir's going to go first. What's the... So it doesn't apply at all? So that's the question. Right? So would you say from our Gemara there's no limit? So that's a topic of major discussion, because one could read our Gemara to say that there is a half limit. Now, you could say that the Gemara is not telling you anything about limits. The Gemara is just telling you what Maruf did, that he gave away a half, and he wasn't worried about the one-fifth limitation. So that's a little bit of subject of discussion. There are those who read this as saying that there's a one-fifth limitation, working on the assumption that Maruf gave away as much as he could and stopped where it was too much. Why should there be any limit at all? If you're dead, you're dead. So the answer is because we're worried about your yorshim. And to say we're worried about yorshim means a couple things. Right? Why would we be worried about yorshim? Why don't you have the right to say, I'll give my money to whoever I want? So Gemara Yeshin Ochlin tells us that there is some kind of isser called Avuri Achsanta. Is it an Isser or is it something else? It's not clear. Parenthetically, what the Gemara and Yishnu Ochlin is also dealing with is there is an Isser that no longer applies. That at one point in Jewish history, there was a prohibition to be Mavir Nachala, meaning that the Nachalas had to be assigned to the respected Shvatim, and to cause that to be switched around, there was a temporary prohibition involving that. Now we talk about being Mavir Nachala, we mean it in a less absolute sense. And the assumption seems to be that the property of the father is meant in some degree to go to his inheritors, and to mess with that, so to speak, is something wrong. How wrong is it? So what language do you find in the Gemara? Find some vague languages, right? So,
Chachamim, like, frown upon it.
Right, so Ruach Chachamim is not Nocha Heimanu. Chazal aren't approving of it. Also, the Gemara says not to do it even from a bad son to a good son, right? Meaning that under normal circumstances, it's not right to say, okay, you'll give out your money based on how much you like your respective children, give them a score. Okay, my favorite son is 100, and my less favorite son is 75, and my disapproved of son is 22, and I'll give out based on those proportional numbers. So that, the Gemara is clearly saying not to do, that you give more to a Bechor, but other than that, not to make such discrimination. But that's also a little bit subjective. Let's say you want to decide you have a child who's really, who runs off and joins ISIS, so you decide you don't want to support that child, so presumably that you do have a right to disinherit. So there's a lot of vague guidelines there. We're not sure, are we completely disregarding the merit of the children? Probably not, but at the same time, the Gemara does say that even from a good son to a bad son to a good son, that's not appropriate. How not appropriate is it? That's also vague. It's something that we don't like. It's something that's not appropriate.
I don't remember if it passed under Biachman and Broca, but Mike, so you see that you have instances where you could sort of like mess around with what the children are getting.
Right, so with the numbers.
Right,
so that's the question. You see, that's also the topic of the Gemara, somewhat complicated Gemara and then Gimel, if you saw that, where in terms of adjusting the numbers that would go to the dowry of the daughters and what effect that would have on the estate, that was also brought up as a possible concern of some issue that we have with taking away from what the sons are destined to inherit. So what's the nature of that problem? So some kind of a concept of not being maver nachla, however you want to categorize that. Are there any other issues? Any other reasons not to move things around from your inheritance? Well, Pishnayim specifically, right, to the Bechor, but that would be out of whatever is part of nachla. But you see, we also have an idea that something is coming to somebody. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim talks about this. We say, Al Timna Tov Mi Balav. Somebody has some kind of benefit coming to him, so we try not to deprive him of that, and perhaps, even though this is not their money yet, but there is some moral value in not changing course. There's another possible consideration that could be there. Right? What if your children are impoverished? Right? Then we could say, or if they're close to impoverished, or if they're in risk of being impoverished, right? So then we could say that there is a stucky issue, that it would not be right. Somebody has a sizable estate, and he's going to leave children who are going to need stucca, so to say, okay, I will give my money instead to some institution, and not to the children, and they're going to have to take from stucca, so presumably from a stucca perspective, there is something wrong there.
If your children are poor, would it be considered staka giving it all to
them? So it is considered staka, even when the father is alive. After a very young age, the Gemara says that the father is not really obligated to support the children after a very young age, the Gemara in Suvis. So it's certainly staka for the father to give poor children. We discussed a few weeks ago an interesting question in terms of whether a child is called an ani automatically, because a child doesn't have any independent income. On the other hand, he's not suffering because his parents are taking care of him. So is an ani somebody who doesn't have any money, or an ani somebody who has needs? What if you could separate between the two? You could have somebody who doesn't have any money but doesn't have any needs. So is that called an ani, and is that a recipient of staka? That we mentioned the Stipler has an essay about this in the Sefer Sukkah. So there could be a staka issue in moving money away from your child. Hi.
What if the children are all very wealthy?
So that's another question. So if that's the issue, so then presumably from a stocker perspective, you don't have this. I remember when Warren Buffett a few years ago made a public declaration that Warren Buffett is either the richest or the second richest man in America. He keeps shuffling up and down, but he's definitely more than twice as rich as I am. And he really is. So he made a declaration that he's leaving huge amounts after he dies to charity. And remember, he gave a press conference, and when a reporter gets up, says, I have a question for you. What did your children do wrong? The assumption being that he was now taking away these many billions from his children, and there was some kind of active punishment on them. And I think he responded at the time that my kids have always lived life as the richest people on the planet. They're not really going to be suffering, and he doesn't think that it's necessarily the best thing for them that they should also just be spoon-fed all of his extra billions. They certainly are doing okay, and it's not necessary. So clearly there are different cheshbonos that people have in terms of that, which I think is a little bit your question. So then maybe you should say that it is appropriate under some circumstances to redirect your money elsewhere. So, first of all, it's just interesting to note that if you think that this Gemara is putting a limit of a half, right, which is maybe arguable, it's hard to know because Marukva maybe had his own considerations about what to do with the other half as far as who his descendants were. So we don't know if he necessarily was maxing out the limit when he said, give away half of my money to Tzedaka. And maybe he had other considerations. But there are those who assume that that's the thrust of this Gemara, that while you're alive, you shouldn't give away more than a fifth. But after you're dead, then you can give away up to a half. So it sounds like we're saying that we always have considerations of not going too far with tzedakah. It's always possible to go too far. So when you're alive, there's one way to go too far. And when you're no longer alive, there's a different way to go too far. That you're depriving your family, that's a different issue. It doesn't have the same numbers, but it has its own numbers. Now, there are other gersos in this Gemara. If you saw, I think they were on the Maamar Komos. Seems like there are other gersos by implication. Right? One is in the Sheoltos, and one is in Rebbeinu Yonah. And did you see those? Right, well, what does the Sheoltos seem to have? Right, the Sheoltos of Vachaigon. Vachaigon was really on the border between the Gaonim and the Rishonim. He lived in the 900s. So he was worried about his children. So he organized all the topics in Halacha based on the Parsha so that his children should have an easy way to learn all the basic Halachas. So that's what the Sefer that we have called the Sheoltos of Vachaigon. Everything is associated with a different Parsha. So in this case, it was actually what we're up to now, Parshas Truma, Parshas Kisisa. We're in between the Parshas where he talks about these things. So he discusses in Parshas Truma, last week's Parsha, he has a whole essay on tzedakah. And then in the end of that essay, so he talks about how when you're on your deathbed, so then you can give up to a third. Right, so the idea of a third seems to be that he had a different gersa in the Gemara. Right, the Gemara talks about a third in the context of Hiddur Mitzvah. It's not clear why that should have any relevance to this. Maybe it's relevant because the Gemara says that three mitzvahs will wipe you out, although presumably that statement could have been said about any fraction. But if the idea is we're concerned about being wiped out, so maybe we're only interested in one third rather than more than a third. It's a little bit of a stretch, again, because the Gemara probably could have said that by any fraction. But it's hard otherwise to know what the connection should be. I mean, there is a back and forth in that Gemara and Bava Kamma and Daf Tes where it sounds like it's talking about one third as kind of an upper limit to how much you can afford to spend, even though the Gemara ultimately interprets it differently. Right? The Gemara ultimately interprets it that it's about adding on a third to the Hiddur Mitzvah. But maybe the Havamin in the Gemara makes it sound like there is a one-third limitation to how much you should give away. So then we'll have a contradiction, because on the one hand the Gemara says one-fifth, and elsewhere the Gemara says one-third. So maybe one's for when you're alive and one's for after you're dead. So if that's the case, so then maybe that's the approach of the Sheoltos, where he was coming from a different gersa, but it would be that you can give up to a third. And there the concern is not one-fifth means you're going to have to go begging, and one-third means you're essentially compromising the estate in a fundamental way. Okay, there's also a third gersa. I think you see the Mekubetzas, quote to the Talmid Rebbeinu Yonah. So according to the Talmid Rebbeinu Yonah, their gersa of the Gemara seems to be that he gave away everything. So there it sounds like one really could do that then. One could give away everything. So you find all of those appearing la halacha in different versions. And then there are those who say that the idea that you should not disinherit your children means you should not completely disinherit your children. But you should leave something. And how much should you leave? So it could be maybe very little. If you look at the Rush in Dav Nun, so the Rush and Simen Tesvav in Perek Revi and Simen Tesvav. So the Rush comments over there on the Gemara and Daf Nun. Ram Rabbi Lo Yemar Shlakish Hakosev Kol Machasul Levana of Hu Ishtov Mizonim Mehen Vlasel Ches Kavasa Rabbi Lo Yevusha Eskim Avaz VeAvaz Yosu Mechoma Shemi Yistarach Lebrios. Nice, that's the line that we know. And as the Rush, Yerushalmi Pamishoni Yochel Avaz Vizchomesh V'Acharke Chogem Mishmer Revach B'Chol Shanes. How do you calculate that? So a fifth of everything you have. The first time you talk about this. And then after that, a fifth of everything you're making. And then ends the Rush by saying, V'hani mile mechayim, aval yachar misa, yachol v'azvez yosu mechomesh. So according to the Rush, right, the thrust of our Gemara doesn't identify it, but the Rush is commenting on Daf Nun, but he's basically paskening from our Gemara, he's taking the line from the Gemara in Samach Zayin and applying it here. So what's the thrust of what he's saying? He's saying that our Gemara really only tells you that the limit of Chomesh doesn't apply. Is there any limit? We don't know. Doesn't say anything about it. Just says that there's no limit of a Chomesh. And so the idea that we should pay attention to how much Marukva actually gave seems like from the Rush that's not really an issue. If you look at the Rif, also in the fourth parak, and so what does the Rif say? Amar Rav Yila, different spelling. Amar Rav Yila Buushes Kiram Avazveis Lo Yavazveis Yos Chomesh Shema Yitzdarech Lebrios Vahani Mile Mechayim Aval Yachar Misa Les Lan Ba Kemaisa Demar Okva Beperak Mitzias Aisha. So again, what's the message you get from the Rif? From the Rif, right? He's here. He's explicitly quoting Mar Okva, as opposed to the Rash, who didn't tell you his source. But here the Rif is clearly telling you Mar Okva is my source. And what is the message of Mar Okva? No limit. Just that the Chiddush of Mar Okva is that the Chomesh doesn't make a difference. But that there should be some specific number doesn't really seem to be.
Is it that there's no limit or that we don't have a fixed limit?
Well, he doesn't say the limit. So the point seems to be that the chiddush of his story is that the limit doesn't apply. So if you look at the Ran, all the Ran adds here is Kamaisa de Marokva, the Bashas Misa, Bizbize, the Palga de Mamone, the Garcina Birshami, the Gamalia Birini by Kumar Funa, Malay Mahomes, Lashon Homes, and Michal Sakal, Amravmuna, Tchila Homes, Akaran, the Kanda Eloch Lishcha. Okay, so that doesn't really tell us much either. But the point being that all the Ran says is he has the Kiris of Argamara of the half, like we have, but doesn't really tell us whether he thinks that's the actual limit or not. But from the Rif and the Rush, it seems like we don't know if there's any limit. We just know that Chomesh doesn't apply. Now, they might still say there's an issue of being over on Avuri Achsanta, that you shouldn't switch around Yerusha. Maybe that's an issue. Now, there may also be people who don't have Yerusha, who don't have Yerusha. So maybe the halacha should distinguish, as some of the poskim note. So should we make a difference? What if somebody has Yerusha and somebody doesn't have Yerusha? Or what if somebody has sons, which is the main path of Yerusha, and somebody has Yerusha who aren't sons? So do we distinguish as far as this Isser? The Gemara says that one should not be Maver Nachala from his sons. So maybe if one has Yerushim who aren't sons, so then maybe he should be allowed to give the money to whoever he wants. If you look in the Me'iri, I don't know if I put it on the Mar Makomos, but it's worth taking a look at tomorrow. So the Me'iri, both on the Gemara on Daf Nun, and the Gemara on Samach Zayin, and the Gemara in Bava Basra, if you take a look at all of his comments, he has kind of a complicated approach that, well, it depends, you have sons who are Aniyim, have you given away one-fifth of your money during your lifetime? If you've given away all the stock that you can, that's one thing. If you haven't, that's another thing. If you have sons who are poor, that's another thing. Maybe you should give away one-third to your children, one-third to tzedakah, and one-third to hekdesh, which is another kind of model for where one-third might come from, because maybe we have one-third bases for each cause. If we say that basically Hektish is a good cause, and Niyam are a good cause, and your family is a good cause, so then if it should all be equal, that's another way to get through. So there is quite an extensive literature about this, about trying to figure out exactly how much you could give and how much you should leave behind. And if you want a Mara Makom to read about this, especially because we're running out of time, again, I apologize for the late start, but there was a very intense machlokas about this in the pages of Tradition. 1994, so there was an article in Tradition where the author posed this question, can one disinherit one's inheritors in favor of charity? And the gist of his article was that it's inappropriate, that there is a problem of being maver nachal, there's a problem of leaving one's relatives out of the picture, and that doesn't really matter who you're doing it for. Whether you're doing it for tzedakah, whether you're doing it for any other reason, to leave one's inheritors high and dry is a problem. That was his essential position. And that the idea of tzedakah as a mitzvah, is a mitzvah on the living, not on the dead. So therefore, from the perspective of a mitzvah of tzedakah, it's not going to add much to the equation to say that that's a good reason to disinherit one's children. Taking very strong issue with this was Mireinu Rav Herschel Shechter Shlita, who wrote a response to this article. It was also printed in Tradition in 1994. And he took very strong issue. And his basic position was that, yes, it's true, the post can do debate how much one is obligated to leave for one's heirs. And we find some who say you have to leave a half, and some who say you have to leave a third, and some who say you should leave some token amount, and some who say not really much of anything. Yes, there are a range of views among poskim, but the idea of leaving your money to tzedakah is an age-old tradition which has a tremendous place within Jewish life, and therefore it should not be cast aspersions. You should not have an attitude that there's something wrong with that. So this was a very intense debate. It was pretty heated, if you want to take a look. So many of the major makoros are discussed in the context of that back and forth. It also raises the question, and this is a very tricky point, and this is one of the issues that I'd like to discuss maybe tomorrow in the context of talking about some of the Ramai things and getting into kfiya. So one of the practical issues that you have in dealing with deathbed donations and late-in-life donations is that there's always a concern, this is what a lot of lawsuits end up revolving around, is that there's always the concern that the elderly are subject to undue pressure. So that becomes a very serious concern that, yes, even if you want to say, this is something that Shechter alludes to in his article, that even if you want to say that it's legitimate for one to decide at the end of his life that he wants to give a huge amount of his money to tzedakah. So what if somebody is going to pressure him to do that? So when is that legitimate and when is that not legitimate? And when is that a profound offense? So that becomes a very tricky question. Again, that's why you have many very heated lawsuits around such questions. But the truth is, it's a question that comes up even without the deathbed situation. That in general, the question of pressuring somebody to give tzedakah is a tricky thing. On the one hand, we have situations where we clearly are comfortable with some degree of social pressure, some degree of putting a person in a position where he feels that he has no choice but to give tzedakah. And, as we'll discuss further, we even have times when tzedakah is actually literally compelled. We have actual kfiya of tzedakah. On the other hand, there are times when that's wrong. So the Gemara, I'll give you a place to look at about this, the Gemara has a strong condemnation about fundraisers who embarrass people into giving tzedakah they can't afford. So you have to figure out where exactly is the line between what you can afford and what you can't afford, and how is the fundraiser supposed to know when it's one and when's the other, and when is this type of pressure appropriate? Hi.
That mashma that people that can afford it, you're allowed to?
So that's what it sounds like, right? So then the question is, so what do we mean by can afford it? Right? How does this avuri achsanta consideration fit into affording, right? So somebody's about to die, will say, yeah, I can afford anything. I got no needs anymore. So you'll say, well, what about your children? Say, I don't like my children. And so to what extent is he allowed to do that? To what extent is he allowed to say that? So if we say there's such a thing as pressuring somebody who can't afford, so how does that correspond to somebody who can't afford to deprive his children of it? You know, or is that called not affording? So that's a very complex question. So I want to try to address that a little bit also in the context of kfiya and in the context also of Ramai. So again, we just have a few more points to make on our Gemara just to close it off, say a little bit more about the idea of selling your things that we talked about in the context of the Emachsara, but it comes up in the end of the Gemara, so just discuss that, some practicalities of that. And then Mario's statements about Rama and also about pressure and kfiya. Any questions, anything that we saw today? Okay, so we'll just quickly recap. So we saw that the Gemara makes a distinction between when you're alive and when you're not, when you're no longer going to be alive. Many different gersolos in the Gemara, probably at least three different gersolos in the Gemara, whether he gave away half, whether he gave away a third, or whether he gave away everything. But it's also an open question whether we care specifically about how much he gave away, or whether the chiddush of the Gemara is that one doesn't have to be bound by the one-fifth limitation. It's a subject to debate among poskim. And then we talked a little bit about some of the various considerations. What is the Isser of Avor Achsant? Is it an actual Isser? Is it an Igra Chal Nochebo? Is there a difference between the Havaras Nachala in the time of the Torah when there was an issue of the Shvatim? And what we talk about nowadays, does it make a difference if the child is really not worthy or just a little bit less preferred? And how does all of this factor into the consideration of Tzedaka, the intense Machlokis in the pages of tradition? A little bit of a background about that whole issue and some of the involved points. All right, so I will wish you all a wonderful day. I'll see you guys everyone tomorrow. All right,